Hello, friends. Welcome. Evil is the destruction of freedom. My name is Chris Jansen, and I have a couple exciting announcements before we begin today's show. Today's show is a series that I put together and released way back in 2020, 5 years ago. So this is kind of like a five-year show and evil show anniversary. We just passed 100,000 downloads on podcasts, so that's one exciting thing I wanted to share. And I'm really excited to watch this last section of the End Evil series, which is part 5 and 6 that are about freedom and slavery and the Tesseract. The Tesseract is also a subject that I cover in my book, and I've been talking to folks about my book, and I'm excited to share I finally have a store on the End Evil website. If you go to endevil.life and you click on the little menu in the corner, you can hit contact Chris. That's where my email's at if you want to contact me. You can join End Evil Connect. That's the newsletter. And there's going to be opportunities for future mastermind meetings and to help get involved and for live roundtable discussions. So that's the way to get involved there. You can put a donation to endevil.life, and that will help go towards a new camera that we're working towards here at End Evil Podcast. But what I'm excited about to share with you right now is the store. Thanks to the help of Brendan Byrne, you can check out our conversation on an earlier interview. I got the book, The End of All Evil. I got plenty of copies. So if you click on this link, either this book here or this link, it will take you to a payment page. And for a $25 donation to the podcast, you get the book and I send you some End Evil podcast stickers. But now, a new exciting thing is happening. My book is coming out. I just finished writing it. And this July 20th, 21st, I'm supposed to be getting hard copies in my hand. And so you can right now click on this link and pre-order that copy that I'll sign for you. And I will also send you some stickers. Or you can get both. And this is a limited time deal that I've got on my website right now. You can order my book, the author's copy signed, and you can get The End of All Evil for $45 for both. And that link is right here on the End Evil store. Congratulations, we now have End Evil store. So this is all to help spread truth, to talk to people. These are tools so we can talk with people, that we can talk about natural law, and we can help tip the balance for the future of humanity in favor of not continuing with the evil prospects that humanity has been lost in for so long. And on that account, I'm going to move forward with the podcast. Thanks for coming, folks. I'll look forward to seeing you all next week. And here's the show. Thanks for coming.
Before. I mean, it's been staring at us in the face the whole time.
Well, maybe you could share with the rest of the class.
Oh, of course. Look, a tesseract. It's another name for a hypercube.
A what?
Well, a hypercube, a four-dimensional cube.
Four dimensions?
Yeah, well, all the elements are there. I mean, rooms repeating, rooms folding in on themselves, teleportation. It could all very well add up. Well, look, here, see. Let's call one dimension length, and represent that with a simple line. Now, two dimensions are length and width, which can be represented by a simple square. Now, if we extend that square one more dimension, we get a cube, which has three dimensions. Length, width, and depth.
Come on, we all pass the eighth grade.
Hush!
Here's the really funky part. If you take this cube and we extend it one more dimension, we get
a tesseract.
I always thought time was considered to be the fourth dimension.
Well, sure, that's one idea, but what if you have a fourth spatial dimension?
There's no such thing.
Hey, buddy, when are you shut up?
Okay. Let's just say that we are in this hypercube, whatever. Does this diagram show us how to get out?
Well, no. It's a hypercube isn't supposed to be real. It's just a theoretical construct.
Oh, well, that makes me feel better.
Is there a theory on how we might get out of this theoretical construct? Well, I don't know.
Oh, don't worry, dear. It's just a matter of time.
Part 5, The Tesseract, or Freedom, or Slavery. In Part 4, we discussed methods of manipulation, and we got into the idea of the Hegelian dialectic. Now, we're going to look deeply into subversive symbolism and its role in mass and individual mind control. Archetypes, such as numbers and symbols, have much more power than the average person would imagine. Let's explore the technology of covert communication and subtle hypnosis. Then we will transition into discussing the trap for the human mind, heart, and soul. The Tesseract is a symbol I chose to describe this complex, engineered matrix of fragmentation. Only the willing individual would walk into a trap. But such a well-hidden and perfectly designed trap, we humans are easy prey. In part 4, under methods of manipulation, I also mentioned subversive symbolism. For the next few slides, we're going to go deeply into some of the subversive symbolism that has been used in our culture to keep the public distracted and confused. Mathematics, one road of the ancient quadrivium, is the language of numbers. Numbers are a reflection of reality. Much like Hermetic principles, numbers do not lie. They just are what they are. And incredible is what they are. Math scientists use numbers to describe things that we can't see. With these principles, we have things like logic circuits or lights that turn on when we walk by. We have the computers, the internet, all of this accessible only through numbers. I have been particularly fascinated with one symbol, which, as it turns out, is difficult to find much information on, the hypercube or tesseract. The reason this particular concept, the 3D morphing into the fourth dimension, sticks out so much is it is reflected in occult symbols like stars and crosses and shapes that we see throughout our society. Is it possible that we could be mentally affected by shapes that we see and associate with feelings? In the upper right-hand corner box, hypercube. The definition of hypercube is a geometric figure, such as a tesseract, in Euclidean space of n dimensions that is analogous to a cube in 3 dimensions, a computer architecture in which each processor is connected to n others based on an analogy to a hypercube of n dimensions. And in the lower right-hand corner, I found this cool visuals of the hypercube put together by someone called Delta Simplex, the wonderful world of mathematics, the fourth dimension, constructing the hypercube. And all the mathematics is available on the internet of how a hypercube works and how to do the actual computations if you're one of those wizards that has that capability. Looks like a lot of fun. Mathematical symmetry in the human body and in nature. Some things to look into are what's known as the seed of life, the flower of life, and the Fibonacci code, or the Fibonacci spiral, or the golden mean is the other name you'll hear often. And you'll find a lot of similarities. And the point here is this, that all throughout mathematics, and the deeper you go into it, you see these relationships to the human body and to the planets and to everything, where there's this same correspondence, like we see in Hermetic principles, the as above, so below principles, where there is proportions that are equal in our body. And those same proportions we find between shapes when we look at things in the virtual world of mathematics. Archetypes, shapes, and numbers. In literature, an archetype is a typical character, an action or a situation that seems to represent universal patterns of human nature. An archetype, also known as a universal symbol, may be a character, a theme, a symbol, or even a setting. Many literary critics are of the opinion that archetypes, which have a common and recurring representation in particular human culture or entire human race, shape the structure and function of a literary work. Carl Jung argued that the root of an archetype is the collective unconscious of mankind. The phrase collective unconscious refers to experiences shared by a race or culture. So this idea of the universal unconscious taps into what we've been discussing with the all, and tapping into our individual subconscious, I would propose, is a way to access the universal unconscious. And so numbers, shapes, and both are both archetypes, and archetypes are basically universal symbols. The point here is that, like other things we've been discussing, these are not creations or projections of humans, not our thoughts. They're something that we can perceive and discover that exists inherently in the fabric of existence. Humans discovered archetypes, not invented them. So this is an underlying foundational structure that we find in reality. Therefore, it hits us more profoundly on a deeper level in the subconscious, because it is the numbers and the shapes are a connection to the deeper inherent world of what is. One of the most common shapes we'll see used in occult circles is the pentagram. This is the Faustian pentagram, also known as the sign of the cloven hoof, the footprint of the devil, the goat of Mendes, or the pentagram of Pats. The pentagram is used extensively in black magic, but when so used, its form always differs in one of three ways. The star may be broken at one point by not permitting the converging lines to touch. It may be inverted by having one point down and two up, or it may be distorted by having the points of varying lengths. When used in black magic, the pentagram is called the sign of the cloven hoof, or the footprint of the devil. The star with two points upward is also called the goat of Mendes, because the inverted star is the same shape as the goat's head. When the upright star turns and the upper point falls to the bottom, it signifies the fall of the morning star. Manly P. Hall. The star is one of the most commonly used symbols. It's often used in Hollywood, in the costumes of military and police, and on flags. Why? And why do we know so little in terms of its meaning or origin of the star design? Of course, the obvious stars in the night sky were very important to ancient cultures, but stars are used in very specific ways in the mystery school tradition. In Masonic symbolism, the way a star is used can mean different things. As it discussed there, Manly Hall, the arms and the orientation all can portray important concepts. So in other words, there could be a record album or a book cover that has a star somewhere on the cover, and one of these arrangements, and the average person like you and I would have never noticed that. It would have been a hidden picture type situation. Only someone who'd studied the occult or some mystery school would see that and think, oh, this person is talking about the devil or the footprint of the devil, and they mean that they're going to do something subversive to other people, where all the other people would never catch on to that symbology. Although at a deeper level, our brain and our subconscious would understand that symbology somewhat, even if we were not conscious of it on a logical plane. A pentagram. A pentagram can represent the human body with the five appendages. We see up in the left-hand corner, each of the rays of the star are individually marked as air, spirit, water, earth, and fire. That's an elemental arrangement. And then up on the top right, you can see them, the rays aligned with the human body, the head, the arms, and the legs, or arms and the feet. Superimposing the human form over the star to see the mathematical geometry and the symmetry, similarity, and correspondence. So the star could have been used as to describe the illumination of man and the perfect form, this connection to nature and nature's forces. However, Anton LaVey took this symbol, meant to be a tribute to the value of being human and divine, and turned it into something lowly by inverting the ray to the ground, like the goat who's in the base mind, not the higher conscious, looking towards the ground. This is the subversion of an elemental archetype symbol. Occult dark magic trickery is a little hard to grasp at first, but what it does is takes something like an archetype that they understand and know very well, and then present it to the public in a warped, inverted fashion, sort of a way of trickery to keep the average person from understanding the deeper knowledge. In Satanism, the pentagram is also used, but since Satanism represents the carnal instincts of man, or the opposite of spiritual nature, the pentagram is inverted to perfectly accommodate the head of the goat. Its horns, representing duality, thrust upwards in defiance. The other three points inverted, or the Trinity, denied. The Baphomet represents the powers of darkness combined with the generative fertility of the goat. In its pure form, the pentagram is shown encompassing the figure of a man in the five points of the star, three points up, two pointing down, like in the upper picture, symbolizing man's spiritual nature. So the goal should be our spiritual nature, finding balance with the environment, but instead it's been substituted in the psyche of humans with this idea of being lowly to the ground like a goat and looking for the most base desires, not the higher consciousness desire. Numbers are the sources of form and energy in the world. They are dynamic and active, even among themselves, almost human in their capacity for mutual influence. Theon of Smyrna. Numbers, in the Pythagorean view, can be androgynous or sexual, procreators or progeny, active or passive, heterogeneous or promiscuous, generous or miserly, undefined or individualized. They have their attractions, repulsions, families, friends. They make marriage contracts. They are, in fact, the very elements of nature. The tools of geometry and number represent the means to attain knowledge of both external and internal space and time. These instruments, once used by architects and philosophers, became instead, from the time of the Age of Reason, the tools of the engineer. And in the lower picture, you see fire, earth, air, universe, and water being depicted as the Platonic solids. It seems so strange to have numbers described as having relationships and emotions. But when you consider that, yes, each number does have a distinct different relationship with every other number, and in some way, they all react in different ways and in different situations, just like Platonic shapes that you see here, they can all be cut from the cube using mathematical rays. And sexual sounds ridiculous, but you notice that numbers do join and duplicate and divide. Notice all the magic in all of this. The magical link is understanding that as in the rhythm and vibrations and polarity of everything, as above, so below, if we have knowledge of the underlying workings and foundations of what creates and destroys our reality, these shapes and numbers, we have more power and understanding to apply principles and find technological advances. Again, this is the gift of the universe. The universe is saying, use my principles to learn. Wisdom, wisdom everywhere. From etymonline.com, the etymology spot, a square is a tool for measuring right angles, a carpenter's square. A square also meant a short for a square meal. Square one, the very beginning. Dice and board games are representations of Platonic shapes. All shapes can be derived mathematically or physically by cutting apart a solid. These shapes are discovered or arrived at, and they are not creations of humans' intellect. They are reflections of the intelligence of the all.
We're going to take the fruits of life, as you can see here, and I'm going to connect the centers of each of the 13 circles in the fruits of life with straight lines. And this gives a total of 78 straight lines. After connecting them, you get this beautiful shape that we call Metatron's cube. Why a cube? It's because, as you can see here, when we delete some of the intricate lines in this shape, we can find a cube here outlined in green. Not only that, but we can find another cube, as you can see here in orange, hidden between the lines as well. And as we expand this form inwards or outwards, we can find other cubes, bigger or smaller, to the infinity. The other cool and interesting thing about this form is that it encompasses several geometric shapes. By connecting certain lines in Metatron's cube, you can get interesting geometric shapes, as you can see here.
Okay, now we're going to talk about a square. This is going to be the most important shape we're going to discuss on this presentation. The tesseract is a four-dimensional cube, comes from tessera and actino. Tessera is a small square piece of stone, a Latin tessera, a die or a cube. And actino, this is etymologies we're looking at here, was a word meaning pertaining to rays, actis, a Greek word, beam of light. So, tesseract sent me back to quatuor, which we looked at before, which is different forms of four, basically, quadrant and quadrilateral, every way you could imagine putting quad into a word. So basically what I've found, this is my own research here, is that when you break down tesseract, it basically means etymologically a four-dimensional light ray cube, which is exactly what we see depicted in the visualizations I've found, where what's trying to be expressed on a two-dimensional page is that a three-dimensional box expanding in every direction into four dimensions. So it can expand inside of itself, or it could expand in any direction. And mathematically, this works out, as hard as it is to wrap our brain around. My own research, trying to understand a little bit more about this tesseract, I came up with this idea that back to what we were saying before about principles. Principles are truths that can give us freedom. And this power and freedom allows us to do things we would not otherwise have access to. The deeper meaning is about transcendence. And one way to look at it is in our brain. We have a lower brain, the limbic system, or the mammalian brainstem. And as we work on becoming more wise, we can transcend from the lower brain and the emotional responses into the higher realm, where we're able to do higher brain processes, where we imagine and think and use logic to come up with new ideas and ways around difficulties. So another way to look at this is the merging of the male and female brain hemispheres to create a circuit which can tune itself to the great unconsciousness, or the subconscious brain, where all knowledge and wisdom is available. The trouble is, in the modern day and age, a tesseract has been created, a four-day light cube ray. One way to look at that symbol would be the television box that gets put on the human's head and blocks off the senses from all sides, all six sides. When I saw this animated short, it made me think of the tesseract and the idea of how we could be closed in from every side, like a cube would do. Remember the idea from Dark World, with everyone walking around in their own little dark cities? I mean, dark city. Let's look at the hypercube with this in mind.
The hypercube is one of the most occulted symbols in all of occultism. And you don't reach the understanding of the hypercube unless you're initiated into some tradition. Okay, it's very difficult to even get information about this symbolism unless you actually belong to some form of an occult institution. The hypercube represents a prison. This is prison symbolism. Okay, the inner cube represents the spiritual or divine nature, and it is imprisoned in the physical world. Now, that's a worldview. Okay, this is what this worldview is attached to, this symbol in dark occultism. I'm not saying that the entire physical universe is a prison. I'm telling you that that's how dark occultists use this symbol. Okay, so this is everywhere, actually, the hypercube. In my research for doing this presentation, I found it everywhere.
The tesseract is another way of describing the concept of the hypercube, which is the four-dimensional platonic shape. In the right-hand lower corner, you see I was trying to find a picture from the Avengers, but I wound up with the Red Skull holding the hypercube, and it reminded me of another mad red-faced guy who supposedly tries to hold too much power and can't seem to handle it very well. Interesting that the hypercube also can be interpreted to be seen as a cross, as one of its projections, as in the Da Vinci painting of the top or left. The significance of the hypercube, or the tesseract, is understanding that with the combined knowledge of the human psyche, the dark controlling forces of this world have been working for generations to perfect the most unescapable trap for the human mind. Although this trap is invisible, it's an inner problem in individuals. It's touching every human brain on the planet that has ever watched a television, ever been to a place of religion, or voted for a legislator, or driven a car. Every wall of the tesseract is like an obstacle that is put between the human psyche and the natural system that is all around us, the opportunity to become enlightened, like the flower of life blooming. The organism that we're all part of, called the All, is being blocked by this tesseract, tool of the dark occultists. The deeper truth is that we all have this hypercube inside of us, inside of the flower of life, which is our great gift of human life in our anatomy, and that mathematical perfection that comes with it. We can use this incredible tool to duplicate and share goodness, or we stay and join the dark occultists in the parade of covering every human's creative spirit with the black spirit box, the hypercube built to trap your mind from the inside. David Icke, from his book, The Biggest Secret. The double square, one square on top of another in any form, is more secret society symbolism. In the secret language of symbolism, one square on top of another means control of all that is right and all that is wrong, all that is just and all that is unjust, all that is positive and all that is negative. In other words, we control everything. What most people don't know is that shapes like squares and stars are ubiquitous, used in all control structures. Similar to advertising, the way they're used, people put a sticker with a star on it to show the house is protected by an alarm. These type of symbols do affect the viewer mentally. Think about the octagon. The octagon is the stop sign, which universally is understood even without the letters. Here you see a depiction of the Overton window, which shows how more or less freedom can be shifted by changing the thoughts of the people. The Overton window defines what policy proposals are considered mainstream, and it's easy to see that the position of the Overton window in the U.S. is very different from its position in Canada or most of Europe. For instance, capital punishment is outside of the Overton window in Europe. A tax on carbon emissions is inside the Overton window in most European countries. Certain gun rights are inside the Overton window in many parts of the U.S., but would be seen as incredibly radical and outside the Overton window in Europe. Restricting abortion rights is outside of the Overton window in most of Europe, notable exceptions, but not in the U.S. The Overton window can be dynamic. It's easy to point to at least one area where the Overton window has moved recently, marriage equality in both US and Europe. So why does this Overton window shift? Think tanks and lobbyists dedicate themselves to this question. So big money, basically, is what shifts the Overton window. You can see on the bottom right here, the picture of the shadow of the man pushing the Overton window, which is the range of acceptable ideas. So that was from an article from the Daily KOS, Swedish Liberal Source, was the name of the source was called the Swedish Liberal. The window shifts based on the perceptions of the public, which can be guided by what authorities or trusted voices deem to be acceptable, sensible, unthinkable, or radical. The freedom of the people will depend and shift based on where their perception shifts, which means that the controlling factions have a huge advantage despite their smaller numbers, because they have the money to push around the sensibilities of the culture and the window of what's acceptable in that culture or society. So how far will governments and organizations go to shift that perception of the public? Here we see a depiction of how to spot a false flag. Immediate national news coverage, political agenda, some of the hallmarks. Incident inspires intense emotion. Initial media stories conflict with the official story. No one's allowed to see the dead bodies or enter the crime scene. Similar drills were held nearby. Mainstream media manipulation and tactics are going on, and there's federal government attention. The Bay of Tonkin is a widely recognized example of a false flag that's been long admitted to. Killing of Martin Luther King has been admitted to by the deep state. The JFK plot is still well documented that there's conspiratorial things going on there. All these are government involvement in swaying opinion through deliberate or planned trickery. A recent demonstration in Oakland, California, a government official was caught in the crowd acting like a provocateur, basically sheep in wolf's clothing, wolf in sheep's clothing, sorry. Tricky, just like evil. If a friend did anything like this to you, so underhanded, would you ever talk to them again? But if it's the government, people seem to keep forgiving. Under this guise, that it's for your protection. Take a look at the Project for a New American Century, or Operation Northwoods, in relationship to September 11th, since that's something we've discussed. And you'll see what I'm talking about. There's no boundary that a government won't go through in order to reach an objective of changing the public opinion, even if that means killing or pretending to kill your own people. So let's think again one more time about the iceberg metaphor, which we formally discussed. The whole truth is often hidden from view. As we begin to look at the truth of mind control on a mass scale and understand how easily human minds can be manipulated, we must begin to ask ourselves, just how much of the truth is underwater here? And how willing are you to go this deep? Pay attention now to your emotional responses. This is where things get even more tricky. Anthony DeMello says, "It is a great mystery that, though the human heart longs for truth, in which it alone finds liberation and delight, the first reaction of human beings to truth is one of hostility and fear."
We saw when we looked at the first degree tracing board of Freemasonry, and pillars play a prominent role in the symbolism of Freemasonry in general. They ultimately represent the masculine and feminine sides of ourselves. Okay, that's what we have to understand about symbols, is that they are used to encode information. Okay, so this image that you're looking at here isn't just a series of symbols and drawings. It's essentially a book. It's a story, okay, that unravels, okay, and delves deeply into the psyche, the nature of self, consciousness, etc. I know that this symbolism will begin to make sense if you have the building blocks in hand in order to decode it. Okay, so it is a form of encoded information. Now, ultimately, what the checkered floor there down at the bottom of the image represents is lower consciousness, base consciousness. We have a reptilian brain, a mammal brain, and a human brain. These are the constructs of the brain. The R complex, or the reptilian complex, is base consciousness. It's our lower level instincts, okay, that drive lower level material world identified behavior. All right. So the fight or flight response is governed by this part of the brain. Simple physical respiration and motor function. All right. Fight or flight response is if you're attacked, if you're under direct physical threat, you have to make a choice. Do you want to run and attempt to escape the physical danger, or do you want to stand and fight? Okay. And that's the lowest level of consciousness there is essentially pure concern or identification with the physical matter and physical surroundings, survival only based consciousness, okay, from a fear-minded perspective, So that's what that floor, that checkered floor, represents, being as low as you can go. You haven't really begun coming out of animal type qualities, all right? You're still identified with that reptilian brain. Now, the pillars represent the spiritual journey into higher states of consciousness through the integration of the masculine and the feminine aspects within ourself. These are not external qualities, they are internal qualities. So of Joaquin and Boaz in Freemasonry. And again, this image is used in alchemy and Rosicrucianism as well. So what I wanted to do with the time we have left is simply look at some other themes that show these two pillars.
NAP, or the non-aggression principle, means do no harm. I feel like this principle is pretty well understood. Many have heard the idea of Jesus and nonviolence, treat people how you want to be treated. This would be the pillar on the right, which is a descriptor of the sacred feminine principle, which is the non-aggression principle. The other pillar, however, the male, the sacred masculine principle, is so oftenly pictured in our society as a destructive force, the hero in a movie who takes revenge. And this is, again, an inversion of the truth. The pillar of self-defense describes better what we see in, we put a child in karate, which is acceptable in our society, the idea of self-defense. It's only acceptable in our society to a certain extent, though, like a child in karate. As soon as it turns into older age, it's only acceptable to go into the military or the police in terms of being someone in a state of defense, self-defense. And that is a defense of the state. Whereas a person who practices self-defense in his or her own neighborhood would be labeled a gangster and an enemy of the state because they were wearing the wrong costume and not wearing the correct symbolism that matches the desires of the dark occultists. In actuality, our physical bodies, our temples, are of such imaginal value that they are worth defending from any force that would try to hamper, destroy, or diminish them. Structures of control in our environment continue to poison the waters, the skies, and the food supply, and need to be opposed with whatever force it takes to defend lives and nature. This principle, the sacred masculine or self-defense principle, which is also symbolized by the snake, the curled snake, which is ready to attack and defend itself. This means whatever force is necessary to stop coercion and violence. If we do not have a balanced viewpoint on this, we become easy prey to evil because we just allow everything to happen. And if we have the courage that nature displays in times of trouble, we are expected, like the snake, to coil up and strike when evil tries to take away our valuable life. This is the sacred and important principle of self-defense.
Also about three pillars or paths which need to be unified to reach the crown chakra, or Keter, as it is known as on the Kabbalistic tree of life. So, that floor of the house is base consciousness, total unawareness of one's own divine nature, okay? A wanderer, okay? See, there's the brain balance that I'm bringing up. The left brain, the right brain, and the Temple of Solomon, the sun and the moon is what Solomon actually translates to. Okay, when we put them together, we reach the all-seeing eye, or the state of spiritual balance. It's called the chemical wedding, the divine union. So that floor of the house represents unconsciousness. Let's look at how that's used. It's wrapped again around the brain of the police, wrapped around their brain. They're telling them in a mocking way, you don't see anything. You don't know what light is. You don't know what darkness is. You don't know what good is. You don't know what evil is. You don't know right from wrong. You're a complete wanderer in desolation on the floor of the house, totally unconscious. And they're telling them that their brain is in a state of that kind of imbalance, in disarray. And they put the other symbols on the third eye chakra.
The most unexpected part of the awakening experience is the overwhelming realization of just how shitty the situation is in reality.
Have you ever had a dream, Neo, that you were so sure was real? What if you were unable to wake from that dream? How would you know the difference between the dream world and the real world?
This can't be.
Be what? Be real?
No.
Here, Neo, which means new, young, or fresh, as in just born, is coming to the realization that he is like a pet in a mechanical fishbowl, in what looks like hundreds of thousands of other pods all around him, all representing his family and friends and neighbors and all the other people in his former experience. In my personal journey, I went through a feeling that made me really emphasize with this moment in the Matrix. When I recognized for myself that the planes in the airspace above my house were spraying particles, I have never felt so uncomfortable in my own world. Everywhere I went, I felt like getting people's attention, pointing at the sky where the crimes were so obviously being committed. But I knew, from actually trying that, that these people were still deep inside the mind trap of the Matrix. They could see no chemtrails. In their dark world, they were probably just condensation trails. No reason to worry. No reason to enact our self-defense mechanism. Let's just be passive and let everything continue. After I chose the two clips, I noticed the similarity from The Matrix and from Finding Nemo. And noticed the similarity in the names, Neo and Nemo. Then I started to think about why I chose each of these two scenes. And of course, they do share the same theme of this enlightenment experience, of describing the allegorical problem of trying to see the hidden picture. Or how do you realize you're being tricked when you are in the state of being tricked? So the two main similarities in Nemo and Neo's adventure are one, the theme of being captured or owned, being in a state of slavery, and two, the intense realization or the moment of illumination, the belief in authority. Authority is an illusion of a diseased psyche based entirely in violence and built upon the erroneous and dogmatic belief that some people are masters who have moral right to issue commands, while others are slaves who have a moral obligation to obey the masters. This is the world's most dangerous religion. Imagine if you were forced in school to practice a Hindu prayer or rituals or a Jewish ceremonies or maybe even satanic ceremonies. How is it that statism is any different than a religious cult? We're just more used to it. As much as it hurts your ears to hear this, it's the first time, if you've never thought about it before, give it some thought and ask yourself, is there really any difference between a religion and the idea of government or authority? It is also a religion that is based purely on the idea or belief system that supports it. For those who do not already deeply understand that the current human condition is slavery, I fully recognize that. And at this point in time, you may not even be able to consider this with an open mind, much of this information, due to a lack of prerequisite knowledge. This is the crux of the whole End Evil series, the deepest and the most difficult truth to accept of all. People really enjoy believing that they are free. No one wants to feel like the new man or Neo or the new idea, trying to wake up like a crying baby, but all full grown and established in a career and a family, starting all over like it's your first day on Earth is not an easy process. And I'm sorry to have to ask you to go on to it, but it makes you a better person. So I'm really not sorry in the long run. If you've never considered this before, it's time to start giving it some thought. There are more than one type of slavery, and it can manifest in a more and more physical way the further away we get from a moral living. So if you're saying to yourself, I'm not in chains right now, well, just imagine that the wage slavery and the mental lack of choices that you're getting are being diminished by the day, and project forward what you see happening over the last 10, 15 years, and you will see that You will easily be in chains or in a pod like Neo if no one does anything to stop the controlling forces, the centralized controlling forces in our world. Larkin Rose is a brave speaker and writer. Check out his book called The Most Dangerous Superstition. The truth is, one who seeks to achieve freedom by petitioning those in power to give it to him has already failed, regardless of the response. To beg for the blessing of authority is to accept that the choice is the master's alone to make, which means that the person is already, by definition, a slave. Lysander Spooner is a character from U.S. history that tells a very intriguing story. His quote, "A man's natural rights are his own against the whole world, and any infringements of them is equally a crime, whether committed by one man or by millions, whether committed by one man calling himself a robber or by millions calling themselves a government." Lysander Spooner is an American individualist, an anarchist, and a legal theorist, mostly known for setting up a commercial post office that was in competition with the government and ended up being shut down by the government. And a lot of his writings were about that process. He continues to have a huge influence on libertarian thinkers of today. He was a dedicated opponent of slavery in all its forms, even advocating guerrilla war to stop it. Stop accepting the legitimacy of slavery by thinking about it in your own mind and asking, what does it really mean to be in a state of slavery? Losing the option to have a choice is the last vestige of what it means to be human. Here's a quote from a book by Etienne de la Boetie. His book, How Organized Crime Runs the Government and Media, is called Understanding Our Slavery. Americans are victims of a multi-trillion dollar con game through which they have been indoctrinated and secretly propagandized into an artificial belief system that teaches them to be taxpayers and some to be order followers to kill and enforce on their fellow tax slaves. It is a system based on lies, brainwashing, propaganda, and the immoral, poisonous idea that some people can be delegated the authority to rule others. The acceptance of the legitimacy of authority is the acceptance that you are a slave and must obey a master. The difference between a free man and a slave is that slaves can't say no. Here's a picture of the Orwell masses standing in front of the screen, and then the reality of today's police force and police state situation. The Orwellian prophetic message seemed so ominous and scary when I was in high school. And it's still shocking to realize that this reality is now in full effect and working better than we feared 10 or 20 years ago. It worked because it happened so slowly and gradually. The recent virus scare is the perfect example of the sponsored voice on the screen everywhere, speaking, and all the mindless people just following orders with no question or reason or persuasion necessary to convince them. Obey and accept facts without question has become a commonplace. That took some incredible work over the last 40 or 50 years to take all the fight and resistance out of such a large population of once proud people who thought freedom was worth fighting for. Now, humans are fine with the globalists, calling them the herd. By continuing to put our faith in non-human structures of power, we relinquish our value and power as individuals. As the power of the non-human entity, like in the cases of institutional belief systems, they have no conscience or conscience. They have no heart and no responsibility for that matter. Religions and military and legislators can lie and pretend that they didn't do it, which is more difficult for individuals. That's the nice thing about the universe giving us all unique face, like each of us is a snowflake to be held accountable. But drone robots all look the same. Monopolies will never do the moral thing, not ever. Why would they behave morally when they have no heart or morals? Why give them so much power? Only people give these structures of authority so much power. What gives them the right to force their will on others? Only people like you give that right away. Only people like me have given that right away. And it's time to stop.
bonds marked the amount of voltage one person would inflict upon another. Milgram's original motive for the experiment was to understand the unthinkable. How the German people could permit the extermination of the Jews.
When I learn of incidents such as the massacre of millions of men, women, and children perpetrated by the Nazis in World War II, how is it possible, I ask myself, that ordinary people, who are courteous and decent in everyday life, can act callously, inhumanely, without any limitations of conscience? Now, there are some studies in my discipline, social psychology, that seem to provide a clue to this question. The problem I wanted to study was a little different. It went a little bit further. It was the issue of authority. Under what conditions would a person obey authority who commanded actions that went against conscience? These are exactly the questions that I wanted to investigate at Yale University.
It is May 1962. An experiment is being conducted in the Elegant Interaction Laboratory at Yale University. The subjects are 40 males between the ages of 20 and 50 residing in the greater New Haven area.
Psychologists have developed several theories to explain how people learn. One theory is that people learn things correctly whenever they get punished for making a mistake.
40 years later, Milgram's infamous experiment, Obedience, is still taught in classrooms around the world.
Would you open those and tell me which of you is which, please, teacher? All right, now the next thing we'll have to do is set the learner up so that he can get some sort of punishment.
What inspired Milgram, I would say there were a number of factors. One of them is he was very ambitious. He wanted to make a mark in social psychology. And he wanted, as he wrote to one friend, he wanted to come up with the boldest experiment that he could think of.
Would you roll up your right sleeve, please? This electrode is connected to the shock generator in the next room. And this electrode paste is to provide a good contact to avoid any blister or burn. Do you have any questions now before we go into the next room?
About 2 years ago, I was at the Veterans Hospital in West Haven. Mm-hmm. And while there, they detected a heart condition. Nothing serious, but as long as I'm having these shocks, how strong are they? How dangerous are they?
Well, no, although they may be painful, they're not dangerous. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No, that's all.
All right, teacher, would you take the test and be seated in front of the shock generator, please, in the next room?
But the experiment was rigged.
The victim was an accomplice of the experimenter. The victim, according to plan, provided many wrong answers. His verbal responses were standardized on tape, and each protest was coordinated to a particular voltage level on the shock generator.
Now, as teacher, you were seated in front of this impressive-looking instrument, the shock generator. Its essential feature is a line of switches that goes from 15 volts to 450 volts, and a set of verbal designations that goes from slight shock to moderate shock, strong shock, very strong shock, intense shock, extreme intensity shock. And finally, danger, severe shock. Your job, the experimenter explains to you, is to teach the learner a simple word pair test. If he gets each answer correctly, fine, you move on to the next pair. But if he makes a mistake, you are instructed to give him an electric shock, starting with 15 volts, and you increase the shock one step on each error.
Incorrect. You'll now get a shock of 105 volts. Hard hit. Just how far can you go on this thing?
As far as is necessary.
Complete the test.
Milgram was very much aware that obedience is a necessary ingredient for society to function. But he focused on the darker side of obedience.
Incorrect. 150 volts. Sad face.
Get me out of here. I told you I had heart trouble. My heart's starting to bother me now.
It's absolutely essential that you continue. You got no other choice, teacher.
Oh, I have a lot of choices. My number one choice is that I wouldn't go on if I thought he was being harmed.
Now, this man makes disobedience seem a very rational and simple deed. Now, other subjects respond quite differently to the experimenter's authority.
Wrong. It's hair. 75 volts.
Please continue.
Some psychologists were troubled by the ethics of it. Many, if not most, subjects found it a highly stressful, conflicted experience. People are stammering, stuttering, laughing hysterically and appropriately.
150 volts.
Experimenter, that's all. Get me out of here now. Get me out of here, please. Let me out of here. You have no right to keep me here. Let me out. Let me out of here. Let me out.
Continue, please.
Let me out of here.
Go on.
Clearly, you know, when we say people went to the top of the shock board, it wasn't like they were going blithely, sadistically. People went stop and go, stop and go. They were in a state of conflict, which was created a tremendous amount of stress. So that was the main critique.
This will be at 3:30.
As his voice began to show increasing frustration, so did I.
And I was really in a state of real conflict and agitation. One of Stanley Milgram's basic contributions was that you don't ask people what they would do given this hypothetical situation. You put them in the situation.
Wrong.
Up to 180 volts. Please continue, teacher.
180 volts.
Oh, I can't stand the pain. Let me out of here.
Can't stand it. I'm not going to kill that man.
According to Milgram, one of the things that's a prerequisite for carrying out acts that are evil is to shed responsibility from your shoulders and hand it over to the person in charge.
I mean, who's going to take the responsibility if anything happens to that gentleman?
I'm responsible for anything that happens here.
Continue, please. Excellent. Slow.
He didn't hold any gun to anybody's head. Just the fact that he conveyed a sense of authority. Roughly 60, 65% of the people went all the way to the top of the shock board.
450 volts. That's it.
Now continue using the last switch on the board, please. The 450 switch for each wrong answer. Continue, please.
I'm not getting no answer.
Don't demand.
You had no other choice, teacher.
Oh, I had a lot of choices.
You had no other choice, teacher.
Oh, I had a lot of choices.
You had no other choice, teacher.
Oh, I had a lot of choices.
You had no other choice, teacher.
Oh, I had a lot of choices. Perception. Now, perception is neurology. The more neurological pathways. Oh, absolutely. You got a lower and a higher consciousness, they call. I say what is consciousness? It's perception. Consciousness is awareness, perception. Now, perception is neurology. The more neurological pathways are developed within your own brain, the more controlled you are to see more. That is logical. And that is the purpose of our life. Some do it by making a beautiful chair. Some do it by learning many languages. Some do it through making podcasts possible. Some do it by serving others with coffee and tea. It does not matter. Whatever it takes to expand your own consciousness, to bring it to from a lower consciousness, animalistic, to this brain, the human brain consciousness, that is connection. And it's done inside the brain. And now we found, once again, it's no pill, it's no drug, it's you, yourself. By the way, we say, get high on your own supply. And get into this breathing. In the beginning of this podcast, you said, yeah, I did this breathing, and it's like DMT, Even we are able, through these pneumatic manipulated exercises, through the breath and pressurizing, and to get into the deepest part of the brain, which also is activated during the REM sleep, the deep sleep. That's the DMT. The DMT, and it's to release trauma. And it's also bloody nice. It's like a drug, and we are able to activate that. But so what I say is we are able to do, to become more than the normal. We super, superhuman means we are actually born to be great, to feel great. Not in the eyes maybe of others, but once you feel great, you radiate greatness. Yeah. You radiate like love. It's like sanity. And people are positively affected. This is going to change the world. Once again, it's no religion, but it's divine. And that's who we are. And that is only done by setting the mind. But first, make the right conditions. That is, the chemistry should be right, and the transportation of the chemistry throughout the body to all the cells, to the DNA, should be done. And that's where I am right now,
right,
with the new study on the DNA.
And Evil, Part 6. No masters, no slaves. Taking the initiative. This presentation is designed to tie together the ideas of the past 6 And Evil presentations and give you some hope and something to do with all the knowledge and the ideas we've discussed. From The End of All Evil by Jeremy Locke. There is a dark conspiracy which has clouded the minds of humanity throughout all ages. This conspiracy is evil incarnate and controls vast mountains of human emotions, work, thought, and speech. It has been responsible for the deaths of hundreds upon hundreds of millions and the slavery of nearly every being who has ever lived. If you can accept a single principle that you have infinite worth, then this book will give you the vision necessary to see the world as it truly is. To know once and for all that this dark conspiracy is not strong, but weak, that evil is not growing, but dying. Let's think of a new concept. Let's think of a thermometer. On one side is hot, and the other side is cold. The thermometer is just one thing, one container of mercury. So it could also be said that hot and cold are not two separate things, but just two polarities of one thing, heat. There is either heat or there is lack of heat. The word cold just describes the condition where there is no heat. The same concept holds true with light. Darkness and light do not exist separately, apart from each other. They would mean nothing. Darkness only means the absence of light. Same as dry. It's just the condition where there's no water. Good and evil in the universal sense are just a continuum in the same way. The state of morality on Earth right now at this given moment could fluctuate if it were graphed on this thermometer. The cumulative aggregate whole of the human race makes significant strides towards improving the family tree or the relationship with nature and each other, and living more in accordance with natural law. The thermometer could potentially change at any moment, but likely more slowly over time. It could drop all the way to becoming clear in a state of good. In the modern day, with our new technology, are we experiencing more freedom or less freedom? I've spent some time looking into the idea of metadata collection and mass surveillance. There are quite a few whistleblowers. Many of the lesser known whistleblowers are the ones I became more interested in, who explain in detail the many ways in which our government collects, stores, and uses every bit of data, which is our own private information. We've known this for quite some time, and yet Americans have not reacted and put a stop to what we know to be criminal behavior, which is illegal by our own laws. So in this way, technology has really crippled our country. This slide is Jeremy Locke, The End of All Evil. What we consider as real slavery is indeed only one form of slavery. The African slaves in the United States were compelled to work and toil for other people's benefit. Their lives were mostly controlled for the benefit of the master, but they had some very limited freedoms. Some were able to create distinct traditions and maintain families. They did their best to build joy into their lives despite the tyranny wrought upon them. Because they were in control of portions of their lives, were they free? How much freedom does a person deserve? How much freedom can be destroyed before we recognize that it is evil? Slavery is not a concept of totality. Slavery exists whenever the freedom of man is destroyed. Theft and bullying are slavery. In history, African natives, Jews, and many others have experienced lifelong slavery. The ultimate slavery is murder. Slavery stops people from being able to make choices for their own lives. Everything that restricts your mind, your movements, and your speech is evil. Slavery is found in both the partial and complete destruction of freedom. Here's a quote from Frederick Douglass. It's from the narrative of the life of Frederick Douglass. I have observed this in my experience of slavery, that whenever my condition was improved, instead of its increasing my contentment, it only increased my desire to be free and set me to thinking of plans to gain my freedom. I have found that to make a contented slave, it is necessary to make a thoughtless one. It is necessary to darken his moral and mental vision, and, as far as possible, to annihilate the power of reason. He must be able to detect no inconsistencies in slavery. He must be able to made to feel that slavery is right, and he can be brought to that only when he ceased to be a man. In part 5, our discussion about the Tesseract included the short image of the laser hypercube being set on the head of the willing slave, who then becomes shut off on all sides from the interconnectedness of life all around. The life energy, the life flow, the tree of life, the circle of life, the circuit or heartbeat of nature. I thought about the cube with six walls, like a dice cube. I came up with six walls that the corrupted dark occultist power cult use to keep humans enslaved and programmed and following orders. I have them listed here in a little picture to depict each. In the top left-hand corner, you see the picture of breaking news. And this is the news is shutting down a particular wall. And that wall is inhibiting our ability to gather non-biased information. So what does the news do? It brings you a story and it tells it to you in a certain way. That picture shows a lot about the way it's being told to you. A very dramatic method. And it's the idea of being non-biased has gone out the window many years ago in the reporting, money-making field of reporting these days. Okay, and then in the top right, you see money. Money consolidates your focus, your life vision. Okay, so that's another wall that's blocking your senses, blocking your whole self. Come down a line here, and on the either side there, you see the scrolls of a sacred religion. And this is just symbolizing, you know, any religion you can imagine with their sacred words and their sacred books. And there's certain symbolism and there's certain clothing. All these structures envelope heart-based intelligence. So you have stories that are telling you what's right and wrong rather than trusting each other and our instincts and our own heart. In the center there, we have the lights and the crowd. This symbolizes the entertainment, the wall of entertainment. Here's where the imagination of the individual is just completely captured and distracted, rather than that imagination we would use to see what's going on in the bigger picture of the world or what's being done. In the bottom left-hand corner, you see the hospital beds and the hospital equipment. And this is the structure. This is to symbolize the structure of the modern medical system of health that's being, which is representing universal health, which is trying to replace the individual's ability to self-heal, and that is better done in a community, a local community, historically a shaman, medicine person, gathering the wisdom of the local tribe and using that wisdom to heal ourselves and to heal our own community. And then in the bottom right-hand corner, we have the structure of the educational scientist system. Another wall blocking and commanding the individual the avoidance to analyze facts on one's own, but instead to trust what I call scientism, the headlines that tell you what's been discovered, without encouraging individual exploration and discovery. One difficulty I face in presenting information in the End Evil series is that I do deeply respect the people in our local communities that provide services, such as those that care for children in schools. And we all have memories of exceptional teachers that made a difference in our lives. In the medical profession, I especially have the deepest respect for the nurses and the assistants and the CNAs and the janitors and the people out there on the floors that do the hard work and show the care and respect to the patients, which is probably the most number one important thing that heals people in the hospital. And of course, I also have respect for the scientific breakthroughs and technological advances that have been made. The problem, the issue, is that with every technological or scientific medical idea coming through, they're coming through a funnel or a background, a filter of a vast network of conglomerate corporate control, which is controlled by what I'm calling the dark occult, the cult of death, those who study evil in so much simple way to say it, the control of others, the coercion. And this control is not tailored to the individual. It does not even care about the individual or the future of humanity. it's focused on its own personal gain. And it, I'm saying the entity, which has been formed in terms of corporations and entities that are financially run groups. Of course, there are people, nefarious people behind these groups, and they have also selfish desires in mind. Here, Mark Passio will explain the deeper truths about money and the one-eye symbolism.
Symbol that needs to be understood. This is a commonly misconstrued symbol. What it ultimately represents is the balanced brain hemispheres combined with the heart. So it's the heart-mind come to full expression. And this is a symbol that is co-opted and perverted and come to be used or identified with the dark occultists. However, that is not what it really represents. What it really represents is light. It represents balance. It represents the light of the creator, the true creator. Okay? It represents thought, emotion, and action in unity, non-dual consciousness. Now watch the eye there up there. Ultimately, that's what it represents. There it is, the human pineal gland in the center of the head, awakened. It is open. It is our one eye, the spiritual vision that only activates and comes online when we become awakened. The dark occult wants to put that light out from the world to build their new world order. This is the world they want to build. They want to finish that pyramid of stone, of block, of bricks, which block us from our true nature. They want to build the world of darkness with no light in it, where they rule from the shadows. And they have all the light in a state of disconnection with everyone else. So this is a dual symbol, and it needs to be understood as such. We need to bring that light to fuller manifestation in the world, to get rid of all the blocks, and to bring that light down so that it joins up with the earth and we can complete the one true great work of truth, love, and freedom. So that is the all-seeing eye. Let's see some examples of it. The first place, obviously, where that sigil comes from is from the $1 bill. Again, identifying it with unity consciousness. The word money is right before our face every day. Billions of people say this word, and they never have actually simply split it in two. The one eye. Mono and I. And they're identifying it with the true one eye, and they're giving it to us again in proxy. And we'll look at how the color green is used in connection with money. Okay? This is the most powerful force driving mind control. This is the ultimate form of mind control. This is what people do dark occultist bidding for. It is the most powerful religion of this world. I have often called it the one and only religion. No matter what religion somebody is, they believe in this. It is the most powerful god of this world. It has taken the place of the true god of creation.
All those symbols and sigils on the dollar bill are part of the magic that makes the Federal Reserve notes so central to our daily life. Our every action and decision is dependent on these green notes. How many times have you heard yourself or someone else change their dreams or plans or hopes because of the issue of money? Churches and politicians both rely on money to survive. As you watch this, I suspect you might even be wondering, what would we do without it? In and of itself, a system of money could maybe be just an honest trading system. But that's not what we've got. The best way to understand the Federal Reserve and central banking is to start with G. Edward Griffin and the creature from Jekyll Island. You can find that in video form or a book form. Otherwise, look into the Federal Reserve and understand that the Federal Reserve is a privately owned entity, not a branch of the government. Likewise, the IRS is not actually a government agency. Privately owned business that is closely overlooked by a government agency. Think of a life decision or a choice that would not involve the god of money. Money is, in our society, in modern times, the most powerful god of this world. And believing in it is the most powerful religion of this world. This is what we are all truly bound to. And if you cannot admit it, I would ask you to give this some thought and consider whether what we're saying here is true. One of the hardest things, I suspect, for many folks to look at, honestly, is the problem with cultural religions. Christianity was my background, so I feel comfortable being critical of it. I went to the Sunday school and did the communions, the whole nine yards. I remember being so incredibly uncomfortable at times in services that I broke out laughing as a child, and my dad dragged me out by my earlobe. What I did not know how to verbalize at the time when I was young is that it is comical to try and tell people what to believe, especially using repetition as the principal method. Ritual repetition will never bring a person closer to divinity. The main problem with religions is that stories are psychologically mesmerizing. People are easily fooled in large groups, especially when some people can so easily derive power and steal the energy and resources of a community using crafty emotional stories. What defense is in place to stop them, those type of people, from taking charge of religious institutions or being in important positions? The best way to avoid being fooled is a healthy ability to challenge anything or anybody that tries to hinder the progress of your consciousness. Stories make good metaphors and allegories, but must always be seen with a critical eye and used with caution. Children and people that are not familiar with the language of symbols and metaphors can be easily confused. Churches are dangerous because they can make a practice of controlling thoughts at a young age and encouraging herd mentality and dogmatic choices without introspection and dialectic thinking.
R-E-L-I-G-A-R-E. All right? Religare means to tie back, to hold back, or to thwart from forward progress by tying or binding. Tying up so that you can't move forward. That's what religare is, and that is the etymological root of religion. Because a false religion is a system of control that is based in unchallenged dogmatic belief, which keeps the mind in a prison in order to hold back the progress of consciousness. And that's where the bulk of humanity is at, in a brain cage. They're in the mind cage, okay? There is a positive connotation of religion. It also means to reunite with. And what we need to reunite ourselves with is the truth and common sense and natural law and a knowledge that there's no such thing as legitimacy to slavery. That's what we need to reunite with, you know? And then we'd be living with true religion. We'd be practicing true religion instead of fake religion.
So let's take it back to the simple basics. Here's how I have redefined morality in my life, which helps with my decision-making process.
Natural law, therefore, is a set of universal, non-man-made, binding, and unchangeable conditions which govern the behavioral consequence of beings with the capacity for holistic intelligence. Natural law governs the aggregate or collective free will behavioral choices of entire populations by manifesting the consequences of the behaviors that we choose. The consequences which we receive are always dependent upon whether our chosen behaviors are either moral or immoral, or in other words, right or wrong.
The green side makes so much more sense when you put it like this. On the left, we have natural law. On the right, man's law. Natural law is based upon principles and truth inherent to creation. Man's law is based on dogmatic beliefs, constructs of mind, things we made up. Natural law can be harmonized with due to knowledge and understanding. Man's law must be complied with due to fear of punishment. Natural law is universal. It exists and applies anywhere in the universe, regardless of location. Man's law differs with location, based upon the whim of legislators. And what this is essentially moral relativism, being ruled by moral relativism. Natural law is eternal and immutable, exists and applies for as long as the universe exists and cannot be changed. Man's law changes with time, based upon the whim of legislators, Again, moral relativism. Right and wrong can change depending on who's running the show. Principle versus law. To understand how evil controls people, it is necessary to understand the difference between principle and law. A principle is a truth that creates freedom. A law is a lie that creates slavery. Principles describe reality. They are knowledge that help you to make use of your world. Because of your intelligence, you recognize principles in everything you do. Every true thing you learn is a principle. The movements of your hands, which foods taste good, mathematics, and empathy for a friend are all based on principles. So this is our reminder to keep your thought process, understanding that it's crucial to get back to the root of things, to make change. We are so accustomed and trained to be reactive to the current situation and the current drama. We need to take a deep breath and start thinking about the long view plan in terms of what is best for all humans and the planet too, for all life. Of course, it is crucial to be in the moment in terms of your consciousness and your actions, but the philosophy will guide the moment. We can spend more moments understanding how to be in alignment with the philosophy of the all, and then the moment will guide itself. Principles will come first. This is so hard to grasp. It's really amazing how backwards our mental viewpoint is structured and how awkward it is at times. Another thing that's viewed in a backwards way in modern times is the word anarchy. Anarchy is from the Greek prefix an, which means without or the absence of, and the Greek noun archon, which means master or ruler. Anarchy does not mean without rules or chaos. It literally means without rulers or without masters. So a lot of times what we say is no masters, no slaves. You'd think that would be something everyone would want to get behind. But the word anarchy has been given a bad name in the public eye, most likely on purpose. Anarchy is often used incorrectly in modern culture. People use the word synonymously with chaos or madness to mean a lack of respect or order. This is frustrating for the anarchist who understands more than anyone the need for order. Without a system of rulers and obedience, we would all have to be self-disciplined, and we would have to create our own local systems of order to maintain a balance and peace. That would require effort and initiative. And the best type of qualities for humans to be practicing would be courtesy and order, and to keep practicing some of the same civil things we do now. Moving towards the extremes of either polarity of intellect or emotion can act as a divisive force which holds us back from the true care and right action. We must engage our will, our willpower, at an individual level to unite these polarizing forces. There's always a struggle to find balance in all we do. Like so many other important topics we discussed in this series, a brain balance and higher brain function are not discussed much in traditional school setting. Understanding ourselves and how our brain works can also help us communicate and deal with others and make better decisions. Things like the television, the institutional belief systems, the government, the corporations, and the criminals all want to get your attention so they can sell you something. If your brain is not well seated on a tight leash, it will wander off to some extreme brought on by a strong emotion. In the pictures here, you can see the right and left hemisphere of the brain would be the polar opposites or extremes. And in the top picture, you see the picture where the heart and the brain are being separated. And then in the bottom right, you see the picture where the lower brain is being separate from in different colors, where the yellow would be the neocortex, the higher brain. So there are lots of ways to have the brain be fragmented or separated. The idea is to have an integrated approach and to connect the different types of thought, the logical thoughts and the intuitive thoughts, the gut feelings and the analytical planning, putting things in order, the heart caring and the mind thinking. Using all of these together, we have a powerful machine It has the ability to find truth and communicate truth and discover the answers. Voltaire is known to say, so long as the people do not care to exercise their freedom, those who wish to tyrannize will do so, for tyrants are active and ardent, and will devote themselves in the name of any number of gods, religious and otherwise, to put shackles upon sleeping men. Our modern society has become lazy. Because there are so many people, one starts to think, oh, someone else will take care of it. There are so many others, surely someone else is more of an authority than myself. So for those of us who've come so far in unraveling this great mystery, let's be confident and start to speak up and speak out. Stand up for your rights.
Ants are not meant to serve grasshoppers. I've seen these ants do great things, and year after year, they somehow manage to pick food for themselves and you. So who is the weaker species? Ants don't serve grasshoppers. It's you who need us. We're a lot stronger than you say we are, and you know it, don't you?
Well, princess.
Hopper, I hate to interrupt, but you ants stay back!
The slaves of that ruling class who have some sort of a moral obligation to obey the master class. And we call this authority. You know what I call it? I call it what it really is, slavery. It's called slavery. It always has been slavery, it is slavery now, and it always will be slavery. Let's stop euphemizing things. Let's call bullshit for what it is. Okay? There's no inherent legitimacy to the concept of slavery, and never has been, and never will be. And we need to understand that's what that is. Authority is slavery, but we're just euphemizing it and calling it something different. Authority is the belief. The belief in the legitimacy of authority is the belief in the legitimacy of slavery. If you believe in authority, you have legitimized the concept of slavery.
Authority. There is no authority on earth that can rightfully govern your life. Born to this world, you and you alone control your eyes, your ears, your tongue, your hands, and your mind. All authority which claims to be able to dispose of you and your abilities is deceit. You were born to this world so that you might have the free agency of life. Life is liberty. With liberty and faith in this world, you can learn and do anything. Anyone who tells you that you must yield your mind, your body, or your possessions to authority is evil. Understand that choices made of your own free will are not evil. There is nothing wrong with sacrifice if it is made willingly. But sacrifice without choice is not sacrifice. It is slavery. Authority always places demands on people by force. Authority never asks permission. Authority is not truth. It's really simple. We just need to remember who's in charge. It's not the people calling themselves authority. It's quite the opposite. If humans begin to see and work towards truth and freedom and proceed to implement the absolute highest ideals, we will see evil diminish and disappear in this world. Truth is authority.
So I have solved this little political dilemma for myself in a very simple way. On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. The shit they shuffle around every 4 years doesn't mean a thing. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around. I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, who, in fact, did not even leave the House on election day, am in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with. So I know that a little later on this year, you're going to have another one of those really swell presidential elections that you like so much. You'll enjoy yourselves. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm sure as soon as the election is over, your country will improve immediately.
I pledge allegiance to myself. Food, shelter, and health. Let me find a beach full of seashells to sell. Put your oxygen mask on first before you offer me help. I've got receipts made of scar tissue. Got the vision of somebody going fishing in the dark. When I start up the motor, it still turns over. But nowadays, a little bit slower. Never been afraid of getting older. I'm much more nervous about these public servants. Kill the lights and shut the curtains. You ain't a real lion if you love the circus. Looking at myself like, what's the purpose? That's when I started to hallucinate. Trying to touch the surface and recuperate. You should have seen the look on my face when I was losing my faith. Y'all got me feeling hesitation. Embarrassment. I might be the last generation of grandparents. I know that I've been fortunate for all the opportunities. Disproportionately disappointed in the human beings. I get it. We're specks of dust at the bus stop busking for extra crust. Like, fuck it. You can sacrifice me to the weather if you promise that you'll let my songs live forever.
Thank you.